Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by...
I'm Nancy Prayer Johnson, deputy editorial board editor and columnist.
And this is our final podcast for 2023. And so I think it's fitting that we have a special guest who is going to talk about his first year in office, Bexar County Judge Peter Sakai. You've started in early January.
January 1.
So it's been almost a year exactly.
Almost.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out to do this with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Gilbert, Nancy. It's glad to be back. I think we were here earlier in the year, so yeah. We're here at the year end.
Now, one of the things that you've talked about when it comes to, you know, your time as county judge, and one of the things you've wanted to do is change the culture at the courthouse. You've talked about that. What exactly do you mean by that when you talk about that?
Well, obviously, when I first came in, I had to kind of assess the situation. I had to develop a new relationship with my colleagues on the commissioner's court. I think one of the things that's been a big adjustment for everybody, and perhaps even with the media, is the fact that Nelson Wolf was there for 20 years, and he's one of a kind. Yeah. There'll probably never, ever be another Nelson Wolf. And I think a lot of people expected that, well, this is the way Nelson did it. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been pretty clear. I've been trying to establish that I'm Peter Sakai, and I do things my way. Perhaps it's more low key. Perhaps it's, you know, I'm not as visible or as vocal as Nelson's with. But I want to assure the public that I have an agenda. I started with my campaign. I said that I would focus in on children and families. I said that I would focus to make this a better community with that focus. And I think I've done that. And we can certainly have that conversation today.
You've talked about your priorities being economic development, public safety, public health. On the economic development front, we got some really good news a few months ago where we found out that the British-based company JCB is building a factory on the south side. And they're going to create more than 1,500 jobs over the next 5 years. I would imagine the process was underway when you took office in January, but what role did you have in making that happen?
Well, I that's something I didn't go around advertising or bragging about, but I was very involved in the recruiting and the communications with JCB. I was the last elected official that JCB talked to before they went back to Savannah, Georgia, ultimately back to UK to make that final decision.
Did they have any concerns or things that had to be, you had to kind of assure them about? Or?
They just continually to do their due diligence. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things they really want to make sure was that we had a workforce, that we had a workforce program, that we would be able to meet their needs. They have specific needs for infrastructure. They needed some assistance for the energy, electricity lines coming into their plant. They wanted to make sure that we had an adequate water supply. Mm-hmm. And so those were all things we need to assure them. And I'll be honest with you, they wanted to make sure that we would support them. Not only would we recruit them, but our support would be ongoing. And I think I was hopefully the closer, so to speak, to assure them that the Bexar County, along with the City of San Antonio and Greater SATX, we're all working together to make sure they are a success for our community and for the whole world. I mean, they're a worldwide manufacturer. Mm-hmm.
When you say closer, I'm trying to just picture you and listen to what's your elevator speech? Why San Antonio?
Well, why San Antonio is because it's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And my conversation with Richard Marks, the CEO here of JCB and here in the United States, was that we talked about all those things. But you know what my last conversation with him was? I said, Richard, we need to close this deal. I said, here in America, and I assumed he didn't really know about American football. I said, you know, your football's different from American football, meaning soccer. And I said, we're in the red zone, Richard, and we need to close this deal. Mm-hmm. And I said, unless we score, then we're not going to win this game. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to assure them. And I said, I hope I didn't offend you by talking about American football. Well, his response to me was, Judge, I just want to let you know that I've spent 7 years already in the United States. And my daughter goes to the University of Georgia.
Okay.
And I'm a strong supporter of the Georgia Bulldogs.
Okay. Okay.
And I had to relate to him. Well, he was going to have to pick either a Longhorn or the Aggies once he came to Texas.
Wow. Well, he has a good college team to support there with Georgia. But
I think the point I'm making, it's relationships.
Yeah.
I think he realized that we're straight shooters. We do what we say, and we'll follow through on whatever JCP needs.
On the issue of public safety, a few months ago, we had a series of shootings of police officers in a short period of time. And Police Chief William McManus was expressing a lot of frustration about it, and particularly with District Attorney Joe Gonzalez. And I think these things have probably been building up for a while. I think the chief has had some issues with the cite and release program for low-level offenders. I think he's suggested that the District Attorney's Office has dismissed or rejected, you know, too many cases as far as he's concerned. When you look at that situation, I guess I would ask where things stand. Things have been a little quieter lately. Mm-hmm. Where do things stand now between the two of them? And how did you get involved in that situation? Because I know it was something you were concerned about.
Well, it's another reflection of the type of leadership. A lot of people aren't aware of what I've done, but so let me put it on the record at year end. The mayor and I talked as these conversations were going on between the chief of police and the district attorney's office. And obviously, in my opinion, they weren't productive. They were finger pointing and they were really dealing with a complex, complicated issue of how people are arrested, people are magistrated, people are set bail, and how they come to court. And so I immediately recognized, being a former judge, although I wasn't on the criminal side of the docket, I understood that all this comes as a process. And one of the things I brought to the table in working with the mayor was like, mayor, you know, it's not just a bail issue. It's how we arrest people, take them down to the magistrate's office, and then process them through. How do magistrates get their information? What information are being given to the magistrates as they set bonds? How fast is the district attorney filing charges? Is he filing charges in an adequate period of time? And then are the courts then working to set these cases and getting them to trial so that people either get their charges dismissed, they get adjudicated, either being put on probation or going to prison, or that their charges, again, are processed, a pretrial diversion, so they get to the right program. And then what's the issue with adjudication is probation and parole, because that's where the repeat offender issue that the chief of police was very frustrated on. And some of those cases had nothing to do with the DA's office. It was dealing with how parole was supervising these prisoners, or not prisoners, these defendants, and what we were doing with pretrial. I have brought out in open court about our electronic monitor system.
Mm-hmm.
And I have asked them to specifically look at the policies and procedures so that if somebody cuts off their monitors, hey, we need to go look for them. We need immediate action, especially if they're a repeat allegedly a violent offender.
And that's not happening.
No, I think we saw that there were glitches. Mm-hmm. Sometimes pretrial didn't talk to the DA's office. DA's office didn't talk to the judges. And then ultimately to the sheriff who has to go look. Yeah. Again, I hope that the public understands that's a process. Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, I wanted to ask you, there was a horrifying story a couple of weeks ago involving Shane James Jr., who allegedly killed six people and wounded three others. Among the casualties were his parents in Bexar County. And he had been arrested and charged in Bexar County in early 2022 on three misdemeanor assault counts. And he was bailed out by the Texas Organizing Project, with a fund that they have. Then afterwards he cut off his ankle monitor and there was a warrant out for his arrest. Mm-hmm. But he was not picked up in that time period. It's a horrible story. I guess what I would ask you about it is, when you look at that case, and we're going to be learning a lot more about it, do you see that as the system failing in some way, or do you just look at this and think this is a horrible tragedy that really couldn't have been foreseen or prevented?
It's both, Gilbert. It's both. It's a horrible tragedy. We hope that it'll never repeat itself. But at the same time, I, as county judge, although technically speaking, it's a court issue, it's a prosecution issue, I feel as county judge, it's a county issue for public safety. And so I am looking at this situation as to where did the system break
down. And the ankle monitor is the thing, one thing you talked about.
The ankle monitor was something I want to know. The other issue was he had warrants.
Yeah.
Now, the difficulty, complexity of that case was we had deputies who went to the house and could have broke down that door and got him and put him in jail. Now, he was there for misdemeanors, which means he wasn't going to be held for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. He may well have been out in order and still do the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those, you look back in 2020, hindsight, and say, well, we should have done this.
Sure.
Because the other example, and I'm not trying to besmirch, is the situation where the San Antonio police officers intervened with a mental health.
Mm-hmm. Melissa.
And there was a killing. Mm-hmm. So it's a tough job for those law enforcement, and we shouldn't second guess law enforcement. Mm-hmm. That situation with SAPD officers, I'll let the courts decide whether or not they need to be adjudicated and punished. That's a court issue. But for the deputies, I think the sheriff's deputies I don't have a problem with the fact that they backed off. They put the responsibility on the parents of that decedent, that the Shane James Jr., to please call the police. They were the victims on the criminal case. Yeah. So they were, in agreement with the actions that the deputies took. That's why at first blush, I don't think anybody messed up. It was an unfortunate circumstance. Now, to the innocent victims, especially those, the parents, and to those in Austin, mm-hmm. I owe it to the community as county judge to make our community safer. Yeah. And I want to see if the system broke down in any way.
You know, the last few times I saw you was first at an IDRA event, mm-hmm. and then the very next morning at a foster care event at UTSA. And as you talk about this, I just think, and I see the constant theme of families and mental health, domestic violence, foster care, and these are all the issues that you are obviously an expert in. Mm-hmm. Are you still active? Like, how active are you in that?
I'm all in. Mm-hmm. That I promised on my campaign that it would focus on the needs of children and families. So every decision, whether it's the JCB as economic development to bring jobs, to raise the income and the economic levels of everybody in our community, especially those in the underserved areas, whether it's to keep focus on foster kids in a system that's broken and figuring out what we can do locally. That's where the Bexar County Fostering Educational Success, mm-hmm. our college-bound docket, is so crucial. And I keep supporting those type of programs. I, as a former judge for 26 years, have learned that you can come up with solutions at the bottom level, at the local level, and then come back up and see if we can partner with our federal government for financial assistance. Mm-hmm. Can we get assistance from the state? And can we partner with our local stakeholders? Mm-hmm. One of the other things is I have really worked hard to develop a city-county relationship. And I think if you talk to Mayor Nuremberg and the people at the city, especially the Public Safety Commission, I don't think this would have happened under the previous administration. That's not a knock on them. That's just the way things were done. I have, on the other hand, said, look, it's good, it's necessary for children and families that we have public safety. So let's keep the police chief and the district attorney from keep pointing fingers to finding solutions. And that's what I bring to the table.
I found your op-ed that you had in our print paper on Friday. It went online before that. Really interesting. And I came away thinking, wow, he's busier than I thought. That's just personal.
I get it.
Not that I thought you weren't busy, because I know you. And, you know, I go back years with you from the first time I worked here. But I just came away thinking that. But one thing, and it was well done. There's a lot of issues that you cover there. But one question that I had after I read it was those mental health beds. Yes. Can you talk just more in detail about what's going on with that?
Well, that was my big push at the legislature. Mm-hmm. And for people for reference, I think you might have saw me in a wheelchair. And that was a result of me working the state legislature in Austin. Okay. I had an accident over there and fell. And so our biggest issue that we tried to push was for a new forensic bed facility here in Bexar County, mm-hmm. utilizing the state hospital grounds so that we didn't have to build up a whole new structure. We could hopefully renovate and replace whatever existing buildings are over there. Forensic beds means beds for people that are mentally ill, mentally incompetent, and have been ruled by the courts to be mentally incompetent, and move them out of the jail, especially low-level offenders, such as the James situation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I really would have liked to seen him, instead of being released and having that issue, could we have transferred him over to a forensic bed with so that it would be secure? Mm-hmm. He wouldn't be able just to go in and out, mm-hmm. but he would get treatment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I want to see mentally ill and people that have been ruled mentally incompetent to get treatment. Mm-hmm. And so what we were able to do, we got $15 million out of the legislature for some upgrading for existing beds. I don't know if they're all be forensic beds. You have to remember in our system, mm-hmm. we have civil commitment. The probate courts have the ability to commit people mm-hmm. that are a danger to themselves or others. So that at least are 50 more beds that we might be able to get at least 50 more people out of jail and move them over there.
Is that 1-5 or 5-0?
1-5.
1-5, okay.
So as you can see, it's $300 million is significant. So that's the reason why we want to try to go to Washington, D.C. and try to see if the Department of Justice is willing to try to fund this from a federal level. I will go back to the legislature in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get that on the interim charges. Mm-hmm. So that's my knowledge base. So I may not be out with press releases, so to speak, but I am working every day to try to make that a reality. Because the other dynamic there is something I brought out of my state of the county. I wanted to make it regional. Mm-hmm. I want to bring in the surrounding counties, especially the rural counties, especially the South Texas. And when I say regional, I'm looking all the way down to the border. Mm-hmm. I'm looking all the way back to my homeland, the Rio Grande Valley, to see how we can help them and they can help us.
Is Uvalde included in that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what I see is San Antonio as at the top of what I call the Texas Diamond. San Antonio to Laredo as the inland port, Corpus Christi as to the seaport, and the Rio Grande Valley as the economic center with Mexico, and go all the way down to Monterey. We already have initiatives going on with the mayor. The mayor has been a leader with that. He's opened up the MOUs, the agreements to develop this. And I, as a county judge, want to do what I can in having conversations with my fellow county judges.
Well, I think you knew that we weren't going to do this interview without me asking you about the Spurs because I can't help myself.
You know, there's treatment for that.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to take a little time off, actually. Get a little rest. But it's been reported that there have been some discussions between the city and the Spurs organization. You've talked about the fact you've been on preliminary conversations about that. Obviously, the big issue for you is that the Spurs' current home, Frost Bank Center, is a county facility. And,
correct.
And so when you look at the situation, we're in the early stages, mm-hmm. but what are your thoughts when it comes to the future of the Frost Bank Center?
The future, in my opinion, is bright because as county judge, I have put as a condition to help support the Spurs. Mm-hmm. I see the Spurs as a major employer, major investment, and a corporate citizen that has given much back to our community. Mm-hmm. As a result, I want to do what I can for the Spurs. And if they believe that it's in their best interest and economic viability to go downtown, I want to look at the options, but also have a duty, what's called a fiduciary duty, that's a legal term, to protect the Frost Bank Center. I have a duty to make sure the Spurs follow their contractual obligations, and I have a duty to hopefully fulfill the promise to our community, especially the East Side. And I made it very clear that that is one of the conditions if the Spurs believe that moving is in their best interest. I would hope, and we are. The city, the county, and the Spurs are talking right now as to what options there are. And right now, it's all preliminary discussion.
Yeah. Would that mean if the Spurs would move downtown at some point, that they would play some role in helping to develop the area around it? Because we've all talked about how there hasn't been the level of economic development surrounding that arena that maybe people—
That would be envision. One of the conditions for them to get my support. Mm-hmm. And so right now, we're not just sitting and waiting. I'm having discussions with the Coliseum Advisory Board, which oversees the entire grounds. Mm-hmm. I'm having conversations with the San Antonio Rodeo, the Livestock Exposition sale, and asking them to start reimagining this property to make it an economic generator. I'll be honest with you, that promise came 20 years ago, just as there was a promise when the Alamo Dome went up. And I feel that those promises have not really been fulfilled up to the expectation that I would have. So I'm asking everybody, city, Spurs, Coliseum Board, this rodeo, how can we make that piece of property viable and an economic generator?
As you were telling the editorial board when you visited with us recently, when you took office nearly a year ago, I mean, the big talk was, are the Spurs leaving for Austin in the near future? And you were mentioning that you had a conversation with the Travis County judge, and you asked him, like, point blank.
I mean, that's my nature. I'm an old judge and an attorney for a long time. Just ask the question. And I'm also, my personality, which obviously is a low-key personality as opposed to my predecessor, Nelson, who spoke his mind and had no problem speaking his mind. Right. I'm one that tends to hold things and keep my cards close to the vest. So when that discussion of whether those two games should go to Austin, Judge Andy Brown reached out to me. We met, and I said, Andy, if you're taking the Spurs, then all bets are off.
Yeah.
And he says, I give you my word that at least he was not going to do that. And after we had further discussions, the reality of the Spurs going to Austin, it's not on the table. Yeah. I can tell you that. It's not. Yeah. That's the reason why that conversation then transitioned to rail. Because the judge of Travis County, wanted a connector to San Antonio. It wasn't San Antonio connecting with Austin. He wanted Austin to connect. He wants to have his citizens be able to go back and forth to San Antonio. Yeah. I saw that as economic development. I think that's a win-win. And we develop, and I think that's the other, I want to try to develop relationships. And so I saw this as opposed to a Travis County, Austin competitor. Are you going to take our Spurs? No. Let's get past that. Even if it were to kind of circle back, I would say, well, then fine. If you really want the Spurs, I would do the same thing. What are you going to do for San Antonio in order for me to buy into this? And so that's my style. That's what I try to do every day. And Nancy, that's the reason why I go from one event to another, because I pick up the IDRA. Yeah. They're a leader in educational reform. And I want to make sure that we're educating our children to the best of our ability. And we're dealing with some of the hot button political issues that go on in Austin. And I need to always be prepared in order that I can adjust as a county judge.
We're going to be heading into an election early in 2024. We got a primary in March, and we're going to have a huge general election next November. We've had the same elections administrator for I guess maybe about nearly two decades, Jackie Callinan. She had said after the 2020 election, I think she was probably worn out from that election process, said that was going to be her last presidential election that she was going to work. And now it's kind of up in the air. I think most people would agree that she's done a lot to kind of stabilize or, you know, bring stability to elections in Bexar County. She's also been criticized by some progressive groups in recent years, I think.
And the other side, the extreme right have challenged her and the validity of the election.
Validity of elections. And I think on the progressive side, it's been more the fact that she's reduced the number of polling sites.
Voter participation.
Yeah, voter participation. And I think her argument has been that with universal voting, people can vote anywhere now on election day. Looking at some sites that maybe don't have a big turnout, she was has reduced that. That's been a controversial thing. But anyway, she's it's still kind of unclear what she's going to do. And we're getting pretty close to this primary. You've talked about wanting to have a conversation with her and kind of determining where things stand. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
That meeting's on the books.
Okay.
And after I have that meeting, I'll assess where Jackie Callinan wants to go for herself and the department. One is I want to treat with all her service and good work. Mm-hmm. I want to give her dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. I do not want to throw her under the bus, although there's some people that would love to do that. At the same time, I want to know what her succession plan is, regardless of whether she wants to stay or go. There has to be a succession plan. Mm-hmm. I also want to know how she's going to address what I consider the constructive criticism. Yeah. The people that have taken time, who have come to court, especially citizens to be heard, we need to listen. And I am listening to them. And so they want to know how come they can't get more increased voting registrars. They want to know how come she keeps cutting polling sites. Mm-hmm. And those are conversations I will have in order if she is going to stay for this next election cycle. And I'll make it real clear to her. I don't want to see any more lawsuits.
Yeah.
Even though I'm a judge, I see a tremendous waste of money, time, and effort for people to go to the courtroom on an issue that we should be able to talk about and come up with a win-win solution. And I believe my skill set as a former judge, lawyer, mediator, mm-hmm. I can hopefully have a process that everybody can be happy with. But at the same time, Jackie needs to make some decisions, and we're going to have that meeting. And I hope to be able to bring that to the public so that they will know who's going to be in charge mm-hmm. of the next election, and they can then take. And I understand some people may not be happy with what I can tell you. Just as much negative comments have been made in open court, I've gotten a lot of positive mm-hmm. comments.
If she wants to stay, you would support her in that, or
with conditions?
With conditions, okay.
I want her to deal with the constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. I want to know how come we can't increase voting registrars, especially mm-hmm. among the young people. Mm-hmm. I want to know how come we have to continually look to cut polling sites. And if we need to, can we have an open public process yeah. so everybody can understand it and accept it? Because there are some closing of polling sites that came upon my election cycle mm-hmm. in 2022 yeah. that I was very disappointed.
Interesting.
Hmm. Because one is I saw the effect on seniors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had seniors calling my campaign headquarters saying, Judge, especially in the South Central, I think it was the site was Collins Garden, yeah. which is along Nogalitos. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said that site closed. I said, Judge, we have to go all the way to Our Lady of the Lake to the west, yeah. or we got to go to McCreeless to the east. Mm-hmm. Judge, we walk to the polls.
Wow.
Tell me how we're going to get to yeah. the poll.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a perspective mm-hmm. I will tell Jackie.
Interesting.
We can't deny those people, especially seniors.
And they're the ones who vote, let's be honest.
You got that right.
True. It's true. Important.
You got that
that's
right.
True.
They want to vote. They need to be included.
And I will fight for them and make yeah. sure that they have access to polling. So a lot of complexity to yeah. that, Gilbert. Yeah. And I appreciate that the media has brought that to our attention.
Yeah.
I think, like anything, I can always do a better job.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask Jackie if she wants to stay. She's got to pick up her game.
Yeah.
What has been the biggest surprise to you in your office this year?
Not so much surprise. As I bring my vision, my leadership, my hopes and aspirations, it's the response, that's the way we've always done it. Yeah. I have to fight status quo. Hmm. I have to fight that people don't want to change. Hmm. I have to fight that perhaps there hasn't been a sense of accountability in county government. Mm. I also have to deal with the fact that my colleagues have really, especially the ones that are more senior than me, they have been running their system that I'm changing. And I think that's why you're seeing some of the comments and opinions from the court.
Well, along those lines, before we wrap things up, I wanted to ask you about an issue that came up when you all were dealing with the budget. Mm-hmm. And Commissioner Tommy Calvert objected to a $10.5 million cap for capital projects that was for each commissioner's precinct. He's threatening at the time to sue the county. He hasn't, as far as I know, he hasn't said anything about that for a while. And correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding of the issue and the reason that maybe other commissioners disagreed with him on this was that there was a feeling that if he, I know he wanted a lot more than that for his precinct, and that if other commissioners had to deal with all these projects that they maybe didn't know so much about, that it was going to be very difficult for them to make good votes, because I think he wanted there to be specific votes on these things. And so that maybe the cap was a way of just saying each commissioner is going to get a certain amount. If I'm misrepresenting that, please let me know. But I guess I wanted to ask you how you saw that issue and, you know, what your relationship is with Commissioner Calvert, because he stirred things up a little bit.
Well, he endorsed me during my campaign. And so I very much appreciate and continue to appreciate Commissioner Calvert. I've told him I want to support any initiative that's good for his precinct, Precinct 4. And I would look hard to make sure we could fund all those type of initiatives. Now he has brought out the fact that he feels that he was left out. Mm-hmm. All I can say is that all those comments and opinions that he rendered, he never told me before he did that in open court. That's the truth. So it was, I think, a bit unfair to say you didn't do what you were supposed to do when he basically aired out in that budget process. The other thing that I bring to the public's attention that we have to have a balanced budget.
Yeah.
We have to by law. We can't deficit spend like the federal government. Perhaps the process needs to be, and I totally agree with him in this respect. We need to look at the process. That process was dictated by the budget office, which has been done for 30 plus years.
You think that maybe that should change?
The budget office needs more input from the commissioners, and they need to get input from the county commissioners themselves. Mm-hmm. He claims that he didn't. But at the same time, I asked budget office what happened. And they said that there was no conversations from Commissioner Calvert to them. So again, miscommunication, misunderstanding. And so I, as a judge, don't fault Commissioner Calvert for protecting his precinct, doing everything he can. But I'm a bit saddened that he has pitted Precinct 4 against Precinct 1, which is also an underserved committee. It's the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
And Commissioner Clay Flores has done her very best to get projects. And understand, her geographic is probably more, it's bigger, and it's more diverse with rural, as is Precinct 4. And so that's just the nature of business. So I hope the public doesn't feel that we're cheating anybody. Mm-hmm. I have made it clear that I am all in for the East Side, especially when it comes to the Frostbank Center. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a matter of either or. It's just how do we take care of everybody, especially from public safety? We have added more deputies. We gave the deputies more pay. We just gave the constables more pay. We're going to go back and look at all our county employees to make sure that they have adequate pay. And we did that with our pay study. And so I'm right now trying to make sure that we take care of county employees, especially those that serve the public, and make sure that our customer service is at the top. Then I'll look at what projects we could have done. And I've made clear to Commissioner Calvert, at least publicly on the record, so to speak, that I'll be willing to look at any public. But like this workforce issue, those were plans that were made by the previous administration. So I need to get caught up, so to speak, to see if it's still viable. You know, when we start talking about millions of dollars, that kind of gets up to close to billions. Our budget is $3 billion, three with a B. And so I have to make sure that we can rapidly use up all that money. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure it focuses on my issues, public safety, public health, economic development, infrastructure, from a focus of children and families. If it's good for children and families, I'm all in. If it's something that doesn't necessarily fall, I'll be circumspect and saying, let's look at it harder and see whether we need to do it. Because, one of the other things is, in this budget process, our budget forecast by budget says we will have a budget crisis in 2 years. And so I'm mindful that we can't spend every dollar that we have to fund every
because
project.
Because of anticipated economic downturn, or what is it?
Downturn in the fact that the federal dollars are going to go away.
You're right.
I need to be very careful how I say it, but those ARPA dollars, those COVID dollars, they've really spoiled us. We've been able to give a lot of money to nonprofits. We've been able to fund a lot of capital programs with ARPA. We're building up our public health department with $30 million of ARPA. We gave $20 million to the 13 school districts for mental health support. All programs, I am supportive, but then right there is $50 million. So I hope the public can understand that there's going to be differences of opinion. We may even get into arguments over what's best. But I, as a county judge, I'm required and I need to protect all residents of Bexar County, all four precincts. And I'm going to try to make sure, especially two, I got to make sure precinct three, which is tends to be the more affluent, it has issues of infrastructure with sewage and roads and parks. And so I want to make sure that part of town, especially when it comes to sewage. I mean, we have a septic tank issue way on the far north side, and I can't let that just go unabated. We got to fix that, or else it endangers the ecological. It endangers the aquifer, and we got to protect the aquifer.
Judge Sky, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Wishing you happy holidays and a happy new year, and the same for everyone listening in.
I have to ask real quick. What's your favorite Christmas song? Favorite Christmas carol song?
We're actually doing something on that. That's why we had to decide for ourselves.
Yes.
I'm old school. And part of that is, as a kid, my parents made sure I went to church.
Okay.
So the song we always sang, and the song that just is always in my head, is Silent Night.
Okay. Very good.
It's classic.
It's very reverent, and it's very...
Did Carrie pick a... Was it a Temptations version of that?
I think so.
yeah. It's really good.
No. I'm the old school. What was sung in church. That's the one that I still can pretty repeat the lyrics.
Right.
I hope you have a good holiday with your family.
Same to you. This has been a blast.
Thank you.
And as I indicated to you, and especially at the editorial board, I'll make every effort to be more accessible, and I would look forward to come back to the podcast and have more conversations. I think these are conversations that are good for the community, and I applaud you and the Express News for all the work y'all do to keep our community informed.
Well, thank you so much, Judge Sky. And for everyone listening in, we're going to be back soon, and take care.
Take care.
Thank you.